Eh?
Fiesta.
Fiesta. This is back with Godfrey in Santa Fe. A people fiesta. That was my first E V
ever.
Ever event. Your first event. P R O D U producing. Your first event as a producer.
What was it? Bands? Speakers?
Everything? S? No, A? S-A? N? Santa Fe? H? A? Had? A? F? I? F fiesta for the T O U R
tourists.
So you guys did a fiesta for the natives, the town folks. G. O. Godfrey did A. B. L. A. Black P. A. N. T. Panther K. I N kind of thing. Kind of thing. W I with the C H O I Chicano. The Chicano people. C O P cops. W A cop watch. He did a cop watch. And F R E free. C L free clinic.
Go ahead.
You may, you can do T H O those kinds of things on the PL O local level.
Certainly.
It is M much harder when you go beyond the local level.
Well, the solution is to do it on a series of localities and basically band together.
Say it louder.
To do those kinds of things on in a series of interlocking localities and then band together an umbrella organization and build yourself up from the grassroots. I mean, I think that's the clear way to force it to happen nationwide or statewide is when it bubbles up. Which, of course, you know, everybody always tries. Sometimes it works, you know.
I-N-S-T.
Instead.
Instead of T trying, to have it be big right at the beginning. Instead of going for like huge numbers, start at the local level and build up from that.
Look at the Food Not Bombs. I think that's a perfect example. Except, well, maybe, oh, that's a really bad example. Never mind. But this is live, so.
Why is it? Why and why? Why and why?
Why it's a good example is because it spread across the world, as far as I know. The whole idea of a Food Not Bombs and, you know, feeding people for free on a regular basis as part of a activist agenda, but it's a failure. It doesn't count because it's not sanctioned by, it's not done on any kind of statewide or nationwide level. So, but something like a cop watch or something like
why?
Like a civilian.
Why is that?
A failure.
Well, that's fine. I mean, because you probably will have people still getting tickets for serving people for free in San Francisco, like they did, a decade ago. You know, if you do that in, you know, downtown Omaha, you know, there's a chance that the state official or the city officials there will try to ticket you for serving food without a license. So in that case, you want some kind of bubbling up that tells people with police backing them up that it's a stupid idea to ticket people for giving free food out to people who need it.
I guess I would think that they are actually a good example of something that's successful. I was there in Boston before it was called Food Not Bombs when they started to do this, and some of the same people moved out here that sort of created the name Food Not Bombs. And, you know, I think what they've done is quite phenomenal, and it's happening in many cities all over the country. It's not just in one or two cities. So I actually think that they've packaged, you know, by calling it Food Not Bombs, you know, it's sort of a short, snappy slogan. And they've done it in a way that if you created a bureaucracy, like a state organization, then you'd be more vulnerable to being arrested and you'd have to raise money to pay for your bureaucracy. Whereas right now it's a very sort of, you know, if somebody gives them a hard time, then it's like, well, who are they going to blame? You know, so it's sort of.
Right.
Yes. Very freewheeling and very powerful and effective, I think.
It has much, much more FLE flexibility that way.
I can't argue with anything you just said, but maybe, you know, when you talk about things like Cop Watch, okay, which you also mentioned, all right, you can see that bubbling up to the city level when you have things like police review commissions, you know, and how many of those are effective, you know, and is it...
Steve, you're asking.
I mean, I think...
Chris?
Well, no, I mean, that's just general.
Does Berkeley have that, a police review commission?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
You're asking, is it effective?
It has some degree of effectiveness. And right now, unfortunately, our Police Review Commission has, last I heard, has not hired a person to be the head staff person. Mm-hmm. So they're being internally subverted by the sort of the right-wing forces within city government to undermine their effectiveness mm-hmm. by refusing to hire a staff person to run the whole show, just, you know, despite the fact that there's many, many very talented people who, you know, could be available mm-hmm. to fill that slot. So, you know, there's, yes, we do have a police review commission, mm-hmm. but, you know, there's also some people either purposefully or unconsciously undermined in various ways. Mm-hmm. And that's actually one of our, you know, demands that we're putting forward right now, you know, in the upcoming election, that the city actually get on the ball and have a permanent head of the police review commission staff position, which has been vacant for quite a while. We had an outstanding person who left to go to another city, so we really need to replace that. And we don't need, you know, bureaucrats putting themselves into the process and undermining it, which some people have tried to do.
W-H-I, which is one thing that a see, a cop watch does it, P, you puts pressure on.
Yeah, well, I think, and especially in Berkeley, but really in any city, you know, no matter who you elect as politicians, they're unlikely to, like, lead the way to do really good policy or implementation. It really takes grassroots activism, like Jesse was talking about, to sort of generate the ideas and to generate, you know, the enthusiasm to force the politicians. I mean, we have countless examples here in Berkeley where lots of good ideas have been put forward and the elected officials either squelch them or ignore them. So we have to create, you know, a powerful movement of concerned residents to push to make things happen. And then sometimes even when we do create that, then there's, you know, sort of bureaucratic backsliding away from doing good things, even if you convince the city council to vote for something like the Sunshine Ordinance. You know, I worked on that for several years. We got it through the city council saying, yes, we want a Sunshine Ordinance. And now, you know, one of the city staff people is trying to say, oh, no, we don't need a Sunshine Ordinance. We should just have a resolution. I'm like, how pathetic and ridiculous that you'd have a resolution that doesn't have any of the binding power of an ordinance when Oakland, San Francisco, Benicia, Contra Costa County, all kinds of places have actually done strong ordinances. And in Berkeley, we don't have a Sunshine Ordinance yet. You know, and how many years has it been since all these other places have done it? Even more shocking, I don't know if you watched the last couple of council meetings, it was mentioned that a newspaper has asked for documents from the city of Berkeley. And the city has refused to give the documents out, claiming that they're confidential, privileged information because they're part of the city council decision-making process. You know, certainly state law makes much of that information available. Prop 59, recently adopted, increases the amount of information that the public has a right to get. But even beyond that, even if it wasn't a state law, even if it wasn't by Prop 59, if newspapers wanted to know, well, who did Chris Worthington meet with, you know, in discussing something on a particular policy, even if I wasn't legally required to give it to them, I would give it to them. It's like, sure, I met with these four people on these four dates. So it's sort of funny that in Berkeley we have, you know, sort of legal efforts to try to subvert the newspapers and the public getting basic information about what's going on in the city of Berkeley decision-making process.
S O sounds like B U Bush.
Kind of the reflexive secrecy. Yeah.
Right.
I think it would be hard for any local government to match the immensity of the magnitude of secrecy and lies that are coming out of Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld.
But
so I'd be reluctant to say that it's comparable.
But they have, but they need some thing. They need something to S-H. Oh, shoot for.
I would hope that what we would all shoot for on a local level is, you know, is a full disclosure and giving the public and the media as much information as possible. But that's not what's happening in Berkeley right now for
and
some reason.
I thought you were going to say that that's what we should shame them with, is comparing them to Bush Cheney.
Yes.
But the alternate strategy.
That is why I made the comparison, why I have the S-H-O show.
Well, but to some extent you have to be careful about doing that, though, because, for instance, when we would when the students did their study that showed that certain council members have never appointed any Latinos or African Americans or almost no Asians, in spite of the fact that they've been in office for years, and that in one case his district has immense numbers of Asians and a large number of students that also don't get appointed, and he was offended that the students didn't credit him with one black appointee that was made by his predecessor. And he was deeply offended that they didn't credit that person to him. Which, even if they did give him an extra person, it would still be a very low percentage and still look, you know, laughable, if not for the tragedy of it all. And I happen to say, well, you know, if you look at Arnold Schwarzenegger or George Bush, and you see what the how the media report their appointment records, they don't credit them, you know, they don't credit George Bush with the appointees that are leftovers from Bill Clinton. They say these are the people that George Bush appointed. So the statistical methodology that the students used to expose, you know, the hypocrisy of some Berkeley politicians is the exact same methodology that, you know, newspapers use all over the country. And yet, I think Gordon Wozniak, the one who has 40% students and refuses to appoint students or people of color, basically, you know, I think he sort of gets this sympathy backlash. If you compare him to George Bush, then you're sort of making it a caricature rather than an actual serious critique. So you have to be careful not to create a sympathy backlash,
right. But
even when it's even when it's so absurd that who would dream that any Berkeley politician could be there for 3 years and never appoint a Latino or African American out of dozens and dozens of appointments?
If
I mean, that's
the
ridiculous.
S-H-O E, the shoe fits.
Wear it.
C, H, A, N, change it. If the shoe fits, change it. The Bush shoe.
Right.
Take it off, put another one on. Like this S, the show is O N only P O S possible on the L local level.
For now, who knows? Different. Who knows? Perhaps you have a future as a statewide commentator.
And they are trying to get rid of public access.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a constant battle.
A. S. As we speak.
Yeah. Well, there's a variety of sort of financial, political, and technological threats that are sort of all bouncing simultaneously.
Did you hear that? Yeah. Do you want to hear more about it? I don't think I could describe what's going on now. Could you do it? Can you? No, I think Chris, you should do it.
Well, the whole industry is, you know, facing various changes. I think it's AT&T is proposing, is arguing that their new service is not subject to utility taxes like cable. So they're basically trying to replace the cable companies with something that can't be regulated and can't have a utility tax attached to it. So I haven't read an awful lot of details about this.
Yeah.
But like, I've skimmed.
B.
It gets rid of the money that the city gets from, say, Comcast, right, basically.
Which is used to pay for community media. So that's sort of one of the technological innovation of what AT&T is doing, and is that exempt from these other policies? They're arguing that it is, because they are a common carrier telecommunications company, and they would argue FCC policy preempts, you know, them from having to pay these taxes. Some lawyers do not think that AT&T is necessarily right. I'm not sure.
L, B-O, both, the, C, cable, and T, E, telecommunications, R, S, A, are saying S, I, since they are C, O, M, P, E, competing with each other. There is no L O N no longer A M monopoly. So S I since the monopoly was the reason they had to pay the city for running the cable through the city.
That's one argument. I'm not sure that's true, because, for instance, with telecommunications, there are multiple phone companies that provide your phone service, and yet they're all subject to the utility tax, generally. So it's not just about monopoly.
And you can have a monopoly with more than one company. I mean, if you have, you know, market dominance, you can have like three companies or two companies.
Yeah, that's still
under, like, you know, antitrust laws. They can't combine, etc. So it's, you know, I think, I don't know, being a layperson, I think they're wrong.
Well, the city did just, I mean, the city tried to regulate the work that telecommunications companies do with the telecommunications ordinance, right, which I think, as much as I'd love to charge these companies for every damage that they cause, I think I was the only person to vote against this ordinance because it was blatantly illegal for us to do it. But the city did do it anyway, and it got thrown out by, you know, so far every judge that's looked at it, I think, has said that it's illegal to do this. So they do have significant leeway through the Federal Communications Commission, you know, regulations that preempt local, you know, regulation and give them great latitude. So, you know, I'm sure that they will make a very strong lobbying case to try to get the federal law to allow cable or phone or telephony or phone or however, whatever system in, to be exempt from these fees. Because companies just want to make as much money as they can.
And then if they're exempt from the fees, that's where the public access...
Well, then, it may be in Berkeley that we could still win a little bit of money for Berkeley Community Media, but how many cities throughout the country are actually going to put up any or very much money if the corporations that do the cable or the phone service are exempt from having to pay any of it? You know, most cities would just kill the whole thing.
But, you know, I would be optimistic in terms of, because the utility tax that pays for a lot of things on the city, in the city budget, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would imagine it's kind of like when the FCC considered loosening the rules on monopolies, on how many stations one person could own or one company could own, and how many types of stations. And then there was a sudden public outcry out of nowhere where most people who are watching kind of the really dry world of, you know, media law and, you know, media monopoly issues just kind of like were assuming there'd be another, you know, impending group of mergers, but then there's this huge rise of just activism and people being pissed off and writing to Congress and showing up, and the Congress said, no, you can't loosen those rules even further. And I think, especially if the cities who are already across the country being battered financially, especially if the cities see that money starting to slip out of their grasp, they're going to start lobbying, and they're going to talk to their reps, you know, who come from, you know, like their fellow politicians, and I think come from the other side of the lobbying spectrum. So maybe that may be, that's a hopeful thing, is kind of what I'm saying, is, you know, I think that may happen. Because, I mean, I don't think cities can take much more impoverishment, you know, when they can avoid it.
I got an email. Which one? About... it, about what we're talking about, but like M-O, most L-I liberals, E-M email, like most liberal emails, it W-E went O-U out the D-A day. Oh, right. When Frank got the email saying, like, you had to have done it like day. And so if you don't pick up your email till after 5 o'clock, it was over. Right. So then he forwards it out, but then everybody's getting it the day after it was due.
Right.
And that often happens.
But a lot of these battles, you know, there may be a technical vote you know, some kind of a decision in a particular time, but it's usually a series of decisions. I mean, hardly ever do I remember any of these things being decided on one particular day. I mean, it's usually a gradual, you know, like a subcommittee and then a committee and then a, you know, a full agency or a legislative body. So it's, I don't think the battle's over. I mean, that one round of the war, you know, may be over, but the war on this is certainly not over. So you will have multiple opportunities to weigh in and...
Yes. Is not the CA cable C
company
CO N T control
contract
yes C O
coming up for renewal. As a matter of fact, Berkeley, Oakland's negotiating now, and they had a compromise, but then it fell apart. Berkeley's is coming up in like a year or two, I think, about a year and a half, 2 years. So we have some extraordinary volunteers in the community here, like Sally Williams who has, and George Conklin, who have volunteered many hours to sort of lay out what is the realm of what's possible for a city to ask for and what does Berkeley need. They were on this telecommunications task force that came up with great recommendations, but so far the city government has not actually implemented their recommendations, unfortunately. And so hopefully when the contract is up for renewal, the city, you know, we can get the city council to and the city staff to actually pay attention to these great recommendations that they put together. Mm. And
like what?
I was afraid you were going to ask that because I haven't looked at this for about 2 years and I'm trying to remember what those recommendations. I remember when I saw the report, it was a great report. And then, since it's not coming up for another couple of years, you know, I don't have it fresh in my mind.
Would the city website
have it? We do have copies of their suggestions.
What?
And it will be heating up in the next year, you know, to get ready for the negotiations. Because you can't wait until the month before the contract expires. It's going to be longer than a 1 year. Right now, I think the city staff are thinking about hiring a consultant who would advise them on how to do this.
Sorry.
So that hasn't come to the city council yet, but it should be in the works in the next three to 6 months, I assume.
Why? Don't you have a SH show on BTV?
Why don't I have a show? I don't know. Somebody suggested that once before and I never...
Talk about the eye issues. A as a ongoing thing.
Yeah, that would probably be a smart thing to do in my spare time.
I was just thinking that.
I guess somebody actually proposed that a long time ago. I guess I mean, I would think about doing such a thing, but I guess I feel like my role in life so much is to sort of go out to the community where they're at. And, you know, when people are having events or parties or discussions,
this is a P.
A part of that. Yeah, it would be me going out, you know, me and some guests talking rather than, I guess I sort of focus on going out and listening to the community talk and, you know, but, you know, there are times when it's good for me to talk. And
yeah, you know, I think, I mean, I don't want to put this on you because, you know, I see you at practically every political event I show up at. Which is great, but so I know you have a really busy schedule, but I think someone in your position who is so on top of what's coming up and like what who the people are who have say done this work 2 years ago, you know, and it's coming up so you can help kind of give more context to what happens, you know, at the city council meetings, for instance, or, you know, what's happening behind closed doors with the developers, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you know, have on, you know, like maybe that's a way to do it as like one, and I think you would probably need someone to kind of help, obviously help organize it. It's not as if, I think it's such a, like if it was weekly, is that what you're thinking?
Yes.
But that would be actually really good because it would be, you know,
current,
and it would be shown for a week, and then you would have, you know, the next week and the next week and the next week.
All the news that doesn't make it into the newspapers, all the scandals, some shocking revelations.
Like I should not be able to have so many hours on Berkeley's public access TV. It's terrible. I mean, we enjoy it, but it's, you know, there should be more demand for the time from the community.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I would think about whether or not that would be a good thing to do. Or it might be, it wouldn't be me, it would be somebody else. But it would certainly be good to have, a direct way to get people information that doesn't, you know, certain things. Somehow the media just don't think they're that interesting and they don't report on them, and yet, you know, they're phenomenally important. Like the case that I was talking about at the last council meeting about the Transaction Corporation killed the courthouse because they, you know, which was going to replace all the parking, and they said, oh, this will destroy downtown. If we take away the parking even for 6 to 9 months, it'll destroy downtown. And then a year and a half later, they put out a proposal saying, well, we're going to tear down the entire Hinks parking garage. And so downtown has lost hundreds of parking spaces in order for Transaction Corporation to make giant profits off of their new building. The courthouse would have replaced all those parking spaces. And yet, if you read the media newspapers, it was like, building a courthouse would devastate downtown business. Now, taking away the parking and not replacing it, which happens to give Transaction Corporation millions of dollars in profits. Now, that doesn't hurt downtown at all, at least if you read the newspapers, because there's nothing reported about how Transaction, you know, tore this down and is making all this money. And there's nothing reported about the curious coincidence that certain politicians received, you know, maximum campaign contributions from the officer, you know, of Transaction Corporation, and coincidentally, those are the same politicians that worked to kill the courthouse. So, you know, it's things like that. You know, to me, that's scandalous that we lost our courthouse, that the county had the money to build, and we lost hundreds of parking spaces for the businesses, and it's virtually not reported anywhere. You know, and it's major news to me. I think the public would want to know.
BTV would give you a DIRC direct ACC a direct access to the community to talk about things like that.
You know what would be interesting is, I mean, I'm kind of just running with this, but to have it, you knew that it was going to be on at a certain, you know, you had a specific time slots, you know, like what, 3 times a week maybe?
Yeah, 3 times a week it replays.
And then you could have it archived somewhere online so that people, you know, could download it later or watch it live or whatever, like this show.
That's what we do. We archive it online.
And I think like that would actually be really interesting. It would be a third, another source for local history, you know, in addition to like, you know, the archives, the archived newspapers, magazines, et cetera.
BTV is W A way you N underused.
Yeah, maybe there's a way to put together a team of people that could do that together. I don't know that I would have the, you know, the time to do it on a weekly basis. I'm assuming that the in order to have a good show, you know, the preparation takes a while.
No, I think that's what ties people up. We don't do any preparation. And we crank out two shows new a week, you know. But it's because we, you know, what we're doing now is the show. We tack on a beginning and we tack on an end.
Right.
So there's no post-production stuff.
And, I mean, for Soapbox Derby, the Calix talk show that you've been on, you know, a call and talk show, we do some research before bringing people on. But it depends on what it is, you know, what the subject is, you know, how in-depth that research is. But it's really, you know, most of it is just going on air and running out of time.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
I mean, because honestly, like, I'm thinking, my image of this is like half an hour.
That's what I was thinking,
yeah, like,
too.
We're talking, you know,
almost like you're just sitting there and talking about what's on your mind that week. Because obviously you have all this stuff on your mind that's what's been happening that's bothering you or that, you know, that you wish people knew about. So just keep it like casual like that. Because I think that would be the thing that would engage people more than something more formal. Just like, you know, a half hour with Chris, you know, and you're just sitting there and you're just talking about what's on your mind.
Chilling with Chris.
Yeah,
right. Video
camera, I mean,
really.
Right. M-Y-T, myth of P-R production is a M-A main major reason why people don't think, why people think they cannot do this.
Well, not everybody has the, you know, super qualified team of people to do their productions that you have here and living, you know, being a part of a community of wonderful people does have its benefits.
Yeah,
to,
definitely.
To
yeah.
make it a team effort.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just one person, you know, it's, you know, it's at least four or five people helping out.
T R T R U true. But how many people would it take? It would take.
But you are the diva, yes. We know that.
You need your person that drops the tapes up to BTV. You need that. We could do that. Yeah, we could do that for you. We could be your interface with BTV. Could P U put the opener and closer credits on? Be happy to do it. You just give us the tape, and then we'll put the beginning, the end on, do all the paperwork, and bring it into BTV. I M A G E and a generous diva.
But you're taking away all of my excuses.
Exactly.
I'm allergic to video cameras. I can't be in the room with them. Oh, I'm here now.
Right.
Oh, well, that's a bad excuse. I'll think of something.
W Mikey could do an opener and closer. Mm. Mikey could create the opener and closer for you. He's very slick. Mm. That's what he does as his job. So he'd do a real nice opener and closer for you.
I'll meditate on it. But not in the very near future, because right now I'm very obsessed with how can we figure out, you know, if there's a way to make it, you know, to sort of reshape the dynamics of what's happening on all these different progressive issues, because, you know, we keep losing momentum. Like
that would be a perfect thing to be able to talk about to people. That would be a perfect vehicle to get that out.
Uh-huh. Possibly. You know, it just dawned on me who it was that suggested this about 5 years ago. It was you!
Exactly. I knew
just
that.
Remembered.
I knew that.
I had forgotten. I remembered somebody had suggested
this. I thought
it
was somebody else other than Frank.
It just dawned on me that...
He hasn't given up either.
It was a few years ago that you suggested that once before. Wow. I guess I should think
You've
about it.
You've had plenty of time to think about it. And why don't you have a show?
What's your excuse?
Well, I do have a show on KALX, both a music and a call-in talk show. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing pretty well, I think, in terms of
You do not
video.
Have to answer this question.
Well, I know, but I figured...
Everything that you say can...
And I know it
will be used against
you. Oh, you know, I've sat in this chair before. Oh, I know.
Like BTV, even, should be doing... BTV should be doing what you're doing, trying to get people like you guys on.
Well, they do, you know, they do a lot of good things, given how little money they have.
I don't have
much.
I don't have money. Uh-huh. Frank doesn't have money, but. I have you. C-I-C-O-R cornered.
So are we going to change the subject?
I think you're talking about the leading into the Berkeley Progressive Alliance there, perhaps.
Like, why don't G.I. Gilman Street have a show?
Oh, I can answer that. Because it's a collective.
And well said, huh?
Yeah, basically, like, our emphasis is on... I think our emphasis is on surviving show to show, weekend to weekend. And I think if somebody came in and said, we want to do a show, or we think you should do a show on BTV, the regular volunteers would say, great, set it up and you do it. And you can come in here and, yeah, and you can come in here and take tapes, you know, take video tapes of bands, whatever you want to do. Great, sounds great. Have fun. That's what... the answer would be because it's really just like a matter of like being so overloaded as volunteers.
But in the context of like creating the Progressive Alliance, I mean actually one of the things we need to think about is, you know, partly how do we organize the concerned people to pressure at the right points, but also how do we get the word out through various forms of media. Of which Berkeley Community Media is sort of more approachable than much, you know, the Chronicle doesn't cover Berkeley stories very often. So stories that the Chronicle wouldn't deem worthy of publishing could get on Berkeley Community Media.
They don't
anyway.
Even L list BTV. Our stuff any list BTV list our events anymore? Is that what you're talking about? The Chronicle years ago, anything we sent them would get listed. Now they don't list stuff like this anymore. It's
no.
Too grassroots, small fry.
But if we're trying to think of how can we, because I mean I think a lot of us feel very frustrated that we elected 6 out of the 9 council members as ostensibly progressive. I mean, they were the progressive candidate at the time they were running, and yet we see very little progressive policy happening, and we see some policies going in a more rightward drift rather than a leftward. So in thinking, you know, okay, so the voters of Berkeley vote for these progressive candidates, but then we end up not getting progressive results. How can we be more effective at, you know, getting the people that we do have elected to do progressive policy? And certainly, you know, having a cable show to get information out to people on a regular basis, I would say your average Berkeley person knows a lot and is very active on national and international policy, but they know virtually nothing about what's happening in Berkeley government about Berkeley itself. They know about when Berkeley says oppose the war, but not about like what's actually happening with the local controversies.
Where they have the most
possibility of
effective change.
Yeah.
Well, the Daily Planet, the Berkeley Daily Planet and the Daily Cal sort of cover, you know, I mean, they cover more than the other newspapers, but you know, those a lot of people don't pick up the, you know,
we read the Berkeley Daily Planet all the time, and then they stopped
delivering
there was a point
it?
No they oh. they stopped putting it
oh,
out
yeah. Right.
And when it came back it seemed different and it didn't seem to have the edge that it had before and we stopped reading it at that point.
Well, but it's still one of the few. I mean, they probably cover more about what's happening in Berkeley than any other newspaper. And
definitely.
The Daily Cal, sort of depending year to year, some years they cover more, some years less. And the other papers, you know, like the Chronicle and the Tribune, they hardly cover Berkeley at all. So somehow we have to, you know, it'd be great if we could actually have all of these progressive people who vote for progressive candidates, have them know, well, what are you actually getting when you vote for people? Are they doing the things that you believe in?
And BTV is there for that.
Yeah, it's a powerful medium that has great potential for reaching. I mean, there are many thousands of people who watch BTV.
A lot of people watch BTV.
Yeah.
I mean, really, Frank can't leave the house without people coming up to him saying they watch the shows.
Yeah. A lot of people come up to me and say they watch the city council meetings on TV, and I'm like, well, I'm sorry to hear that your life is so boring that you have to watch city council meetings. I'm glad that people do.
Yeah.
Lie is that people don't watch public access. That's a big lie.
Oh yeah, people come up to me all the time and give me advice about things that they saw on Berkeley Community Media.
Yeah, when I've been on your show, I've had people come up to me who I had no idea even live in Berkeley. Said, "Oh, I saw you on Frank Moore's show." Oh, great. You know, which I shouldn't be surprised, but it's just the amount of people, the breadth of different people who come up was surprising me, which is great.
And it keeps G-O going, and it keeps. Oh, because things repeat.
Yeah.
That's where we have that thing where we're on 7 nights a week. We're like the all-night programming.
Uh-huh.
So this show will go into rotation once it has its first run. And I think we go through the whole cycle twice a year at this point. So first it plays three times and then twice.
If we were going to do such a thing and have, I mean, it seems like it would be interesting to have like a group of like three or four people do it together. Because I would think, you know, people would get bored listening to me for a half an hour every single week all year round. But if we had a team of people,
I really don't think that's true.
It would sort of be more lively if it was a couple of us doing it together.
There would be a certain intimacy. People would kind of get into a groove with you. But we do need more people, more S H. More shows.
I think it would actually be, if to think about it as doing it with a small group of people that would do a show together would actually be more fun than thinking about just doing like the Chris Worthington show. You know, that doesn't excite me.
Whatever makes it happen, really. Whatever makes it happen, whatever is more compelling for you so that you would do it. One. P. Problem with a group of people. One P. E. Person. P. E. R. Perk. One perk of doing it. Doing L.
Live.
L-U, lover, and the S-H, and this show is I get access to meet to... It's like an excuse, a vehicle for things like this to happen. So that would be a possible thing for the show. It's like, you know, you meet somebody, you say, come on the show. You know, or we have all these people sending us stuff. So you get to meet people that way. So that would be one perk of having a regular show.
Definitely. I do that with Soapbox Derby. You know, I run into somebody who's going to be a good interview or something that's, you know, timely or whatever, or good speaker, well, especially a good speaker. And I say, we can have somebody interview, because we actually have like three people, including myself, who do interviews. So it's actually not, you know, not just me at all. But it's really a ton of fun. And, you know, people, you know, everybody here knows that it's really easy to get people to talk on camera. A camera? What? Okay. You know, microphone? Sure. You know.
I think there this S this show should be how B TV is. BTV should be the way this show is, in that it's it kind of represents a lot of different, like we have so many different kinds of people and things on the show. If BTV would be have a variety like that, and it's also kind of, there's a certain vitality to this show, I think, that sometimes you wish BTV had more of. Looking at you again. I am not J, just K, I kicking your ass. I am kicking BTV's ass as well. And Jesse's ass.
K Gotcha.
Like I H A I had A B A N a band of 14 a band of 14
14-year-olds
right that performed here five months ago something like that they S A they say they sat they say they don't G go to Gilman Street because of the drugs and booze. Oh, you outside. What are they talking about?
They're talking about people who are a pain in the ass. People who come down and, you know, they get like people are overage to buy them liquor up at the corner store or elsewhere. And then, you know, our security goes out, pours out the beer, tells them they can't come in, they hang out. And we have a certain amount of leeway that we can go. Like, we can, like, we're actually not supposed to kick them off of anywhere further than, like, our sidewalk. Mm. We, like, kick them out of the neighborhood. We tell them to go away. We, you know, call the cops on them. Mm. We work with the police to get them out. And it's a really, it really depends on the show. And sometimes you have really popular bands who aren't necessarily bands that would normally attract problem people. But problem people sometimes gravitate to larger crowds. So they show up. It's a real pain in the ass because, you know, when we, in 1990, the cops were convinced that we, you know, were, you know, a den of, you know, drugs and alcohol, you know. Mm. And, you know, we've always been all ages drug and alcohol free. Like, the idea is that we're a safe space for people of all ages to show up and have fun. You know, no fights, no excessively violent dancing, no drinks, no drugs, within two blocks, okay? And in 1990, the cops came in and they were convinced that we were this, you know, total, like, party house. I don't know, we had cake, we were selling beer out of kegs in the store, blah, 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 which, of course, we never have done, and we don't do. So, but we ended up sitting down with them, and over the period of this negotiations, all of us on both sides, the police side and the Gilman side, myself included, learned a heck of a lot about how to kind of work together. And as we worked with the police over the years, new police personnel come in and go out and come in and go out. And sometimes our relationship with them are really good and we can work together to clear people out quickly. And other times, some police force... So some police personnel come in and decide they're going to kind of earn their spurs. I'm going to clean up the Gilman Street kind of thing. And then we just talk to their commander, the area commander, or we talk to people above them in the hierarchy. But it is, you know, it can be a problem. And, you know, it's a constant battle, it seems sometimes. And it really is draining. It's probably the best answer I can give you.
They G go to, do you remember the place they go to? It's in Oakland.
iMusicCast?
Yes. Yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Closed down.
Oh, because they were performing at like a final, their band was performing at one of the final things.
Yeah.
Duct Tape Mafia.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I've heard of them.
Yeah.
Good name.
Yeah. They? Well, the one guy lives across the, his mom and him just bought the house across the street here. So the band rehearses on Sundays all day in the garage.
Oh, wow.
And so that's how we got to know them and invited them onto the show.
Cool.
When? We? T? A? Talk? A? About L O local we mean local our street
well
three houses away.
This area actually has some fascinating resources and people. I think there's three different places decorated for Mardi Gras all within a few blocks. And the best Mardi Gras party that I've been to actually happens right on Curtis Street. So there's, and they decorate their entire house, like practically every inch. And they have, you know, all kinds of great lobster and shrimp and jambalaya and every conceivable thing. And they have, you know, they have the, not quite the smell, but they have all the sounds, you know, of the bayou playing, you know, so you sort of feel like you're in Louisiana when you walk in their house, and you know, the amazing food, and you know, it's there's a lot of creative people in the vicinity, and there's probably no other street in Berkeley that has so many people decorating for the Mardi Gras decorations that I've noticed. And, yeah, I was actually thinking about wearing my Mardi Gras outfit to the next city council meeting because it's actually still going on all week.
Right.
So I haven't quite decided if I'm going to do that or not. I'll have to ask my fashion consultants.
Why? Did? Why does not be Berkeley? Have M O more N nightclubs.
Well, there are some nightclubs that have been around for a long time. Blake's is probably one of the most popular in terms of live music. And some nightclubs have been shut down over the years. You know, so there's sort of a...
Why have they been shut down?
noise and neighbor problems and, you know, outbreaks of violence. I mean, there's a whole range of different reasons in different cases.
And also, I think a lot of it has to do with... I mean, I'm thinking of the Berkeley Square... which used to be on the university across from right below Sacramento. The owner of that club, and I mean, at the time, Gilman and Berkeley Square booked similar bands, but Berkeley Square were able to, they were a bar as well as a restaurant, so they were able to pay higher guarantees, so they got more of the national acts, or the more the higher priced national acts.
Yeah.
But when they ran into neighborhood opposition, their own, I mean, they were a single owner venue that had no connection to the surrounding area, or minimal, probably. And so their owner just kind of said, I don't have to answer to you, you know, go away. And so the neighbor said, well, you know, you can't really do that. This, you know, this is our neighborhood too, and you need to deal with us. And he was like, buzz off. And so it kind of created a, you know, a domino effect where he just started losing, you know, battle after battle in the city bureaucracy and was shut down, you know. I mean, honestly, you know, for all of, you know, Gilman's rough edges and, like, you know, we always have this problem or that problem, at the same time, we're a place that, you know, if we need to meet with the police or, you know, the pyramid or, you know, our neighbors or whatever, we go out and do it, and we go to the city council meetings, and we aren't involved with our community. And so, like, that's the difference. And I think the longest running clubs in Berkeley are the ones that do that, you know, like places like your Ashkenaz or your Freight and Salvage. I mean, I think it's really clear, like, that's what you need to survive in this town. You can't just be a nightclub you know, a standard nightclub operator who's sleazy and, you know, does coke off their office desks.
Do. Are. Are you. S. A. Are you saying. You. Need. A. Need to. B. L. O. Local. Are you saying that you need to be local to run a club in Berkeley?
Not necessarily. You need to be able to deal with your neighbors. You need to be able to, and not treat them like they're just vassals. You know, they may be your customers, but that doesn't mean that they're not people you should listen to.
Well, there's also been some new clubs that either opened or reopened lately, like Anna's. Mm-hmm. She used to have one down on South Berkeley a long time ago, and then she was up on the university, and now she just reopened at Austin Way in downtown. Mm. Her club, you know, is quite a nice, positive place. She basically has sort of jazz-oriented music more than anything else.
Although local
she has musicians? A range.
Is it local musicians?
Generally, yeah. And she performs herself sometimes, and she has pretty interesting people playing. Mm. So she, you know, that's sort of a resurgence of something that used to be here for quite a few years. Mm. And the downtown, although it's extremely expensive, they also have some really, like they had Jackson Browne performing at the downtown restaurant. So they have live music. At, you know, it's sort of a more upscale, expensive place.
What place is this?
Downtown Restaurant.
Oh, that's what it's called, Downtown Restaurant.
That's the name.
And
where
they, is that?
And they've had some great live performers performing there.
Where is
there.
That, the Downtown Restaurant?
It's at Shattuck and, Addison and Shattuck.
Yeah.
On the corner.
Right on the corner there, across from the old 5 and 10.
Yeah. We do need more places. Yeah.
I mean, I think one thing that is also stands in the way is where do you put them? Where do you put a club that has bands that draw people who are loud, who are, you know, not normal looking, who aren't jazz aficionados? You know, do you put them in downtown? Could, like, the city council members deal with, like, the deluge of complaints? Like, you know, there was a guy with a 3-foot Mohican, you know, hanging, you know, sitting in my car when I left downtown restaurant, you know, could they deal with that? I don't know. I mean, I don't know if the neighborhood could deal with it. So if not there, where do you put them?
E.
Do you put them in West Berkeley?
Key. The Keystone?
Was right there,
Was, yeah, right downtown.
Right. And now, it's a condominium, but.
L.
Apartments.
O. Long Branch. That was on San Pablo, wasn't it? The Long Branch. That was a long time
ago. See, I guess, to me, it goes way beyond just losing music clubs as to, you know, there are serious threats to the whole culture of arts and artists and musicians, you know, not only having clubs to go to, but just having studio space and places to live that they can afford. The, you know, the immense yuppification with all these high-income condos being built is literally driving artists out of Berkeley. There's a bunch of artists that got Ellis'd out. Then there's the Drage building. They all got kicked out. And the Save Our Starving Artists project down in Adeline Street, they all got kicked out. So, you know, the policies of the city are actually, and of the, you know, a small number of rich developers who are trying to maximize their profits are driving some famous and creative artists out of the city of Berkeley. And, you know, our city council and our arts commission really aren't doing very much to stop it.
W.
We need to get people to prioritize that.
I, which, I, L, P, R, he predicted when, what's his name, run for mayor. That was when you were talking about it.
Don
Jelinek, when he was a guest on the show when he was running for mayor. That was the exact conversation they had. And he did not, he didn't get it.
Right.
He didn't get it. I mean, this is before the, all this that you're describing happened. And Frank was saying this is what is going to happen if it keeps going that way. And he didn't get it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I think part of what needs to happen is, like I mentioned, like, you know, 3-foot-high mohawks in downtown Berkeley. But I think what you need is, I think the city as a whole needs to get back the sense of tolerance for art. I mean, art is not necessarily pretty or sedate or safe, you know. Art may be people who don't look like you, who don't sound like you, don't smell like you, congregating next to your car, BFT, you know. And, like, for instance, like, I mean, for me, every time I go to part of Oakland, I see the Crucible, which used to be right off of Ashby. And when, you know, there was some kind of, you know, a shooting or some kind of violent incident there. But at the same time, and, you know, they're kind of out of control, but, you know, they were a vibrant place. I mean, I saw, you know, these great movies, you know, they just closed off the street and showed movies on the side of their building. They said, screw it, we'll just do this. And it was a great time, you know, and it was really, you know, exciting and creative and blah, blah, blah. And where is it now? It's in Oakland, you know? I mean, why? Like, to me, that's such a Berkeley situation. And, like, there may have been, like, specific issues with that particular. But I think that the whole mindset of, you know, it has to be, it has to fit into these, you know, big pastel buildings is just disturbing to me, because I think that is really soul crushing in terms of creative life in this town.
Yeah, I think so. But so much of the arts are being driven out of Berkeley. I think partly it has to do with the city policies. Our arts commission and arts staff work for the Economic Development Department. So the Economic Development Department is like, how do we bring more customers to Berkeley?
Right.
So the arts are not the highest priority. And it's the wrong place to have the arts, given the history of the situation, where they're constantly either getting cuts or threatened with cuts. I think the arts need to be supported and encouraged, you know, sort of the studio space and performance space. And, you know, this condo craze where all of these, you know, Lonnie Hancock's affordable housing policies have been wiped out, and the people who build condos can charge, the so-called low-income units can be charged at 120% AMI, area median income. So not only are we not helping homeless people and poor people with our so-called affordable, we're not even helping the lower middle class or barely the middle class, really.
Yeah.
And so we have all these buildings sprouting up, which could be a good thing if it were actually affordable, but instead it's sort of furthering the gentrification by making the entire building is 120% area median income or higher. That's really gentrifying Berkeley dramatically, and that's, I mean, these are some of the mistaken policies that the city government is following, because we haven't organized to counter that with, you know, an alternative. And we really have to get ourselves organized as a community. If we want to stop driving the artists out, we have to get really organized. We can't just have 5 or 10 people show up to try to support them. We have to do massive organizing if we want the arts and cultural, the Civic Arts Commission and the staff person to be out of economic development so that they can actually support the arts and not just be an engine of, you know, supporting more retail businesses.
Like,
we've got to organize to promote that idea.
We H had the B L I. We had the Blind Lemon, and then we also had the storefront on Haste, you know, in the 70s and the 80s. We had a space because we could afford, I mean, it's not that we had any more money than we have now, but it was affordable, so we had a place to do events ourselves, and that's, like, completely out of reach now, even though, you know, we're looking for that. There's no way we could afford a storefront now. But do the Blind Lemon, that was on San Pablo, was all, that was an all age place. It was early, like around 80, 1980. It was before, I mean, it was like, this was like Frank coming up with this all age thing. And we would have bands like the Mutants, and because we were at the Mabuhay, so we had access to all these bands that would say, sure, Frank, I'll play at your club. And then they get there, what do you mean we can't drink? What, we know smoking. What do you mean we can't smoke? You know.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Tell the Mutants that they can't drink and smoke. That's what you did. Yeah, yeah. But now, there's no way that we could afford a space in Berkeley now.
Well, never say never. Stranger things have happened.
B.
Very unlikely things have happened.
B-L. I. The Blind Lemon. H. Had. D. Y. Dylan. Oh, it had a history. It was, it had, like, Dylan had played there during the folk period. It was, I think, a communist, it was the home of the communist group during a certain period, and they'd have all people come in and speak and music and stuff. N. O. Now it's a typewriter store.
Well, that's amazing, because how could anyone make money with a typewriter store in the age of, of computers? It's phenomenal that someone can still make money with a typewriter store.
Well, there's two of them.
There's two stores.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Berkeley.
Yeah.
That's a whole other question.
Perhaps they're diversifying their business.
They are, actually. I've been in them. You buy printer ribbon or printer cartridges.
P. E. People. Need. P. L.
Places.
Places. To. Get. Together. I mean, we literally have people that live in Berkeley that are constantly leaving messages on our machine. People that can't get to San Francisco. They can't, we play at Rich, you know, in Richmond, they can't get there. When are you going to do something in Berkeley again? People that rely on BART, you know, and it's like, I don't even remember the last time we did something in Berkeley. It's, you know.
Well, I'm sure there are places in Berkeley where you could do events.
Like where? We've been looking.
The only places that are really isolated.
Can not even rent. We can't even rent spaces. We tried, we thought, okay, there's all these yoga places all over the place. Now there are a dime a dozen. We're willing to pay to do something. Frank wanted to do something ongoing, one of the performance art type things rather than like the music thing. We went to two yoga places, the one right downtown by the BART. We met with the guy. He loved us. He was excited about us being there. We wrote him a check. We had the space. We came up with all the dates. He went home and looked at our website, at some of our past performances, and saw that there was nudity. He called. He's all upset. He said, you know, yoga is a spiritual practice for the people here. And the thought of doing their yoga on a Sunday morning, knowing that there were nude people here the night before, would be very disruptive. And based on that, we couldn't rent it. Another place, you know, same thing.
Aren't there nude people in the world pretty much every day, somewhere, in every city in the country?
Well, I mean, yoga, when you're not talking about it as a trend, a current trend, I mean, nudity in yoga is like a basic thing. like in its
I was nude form. Myself just today. I guess I shouldn't go near that store, you know. It's,
yeah. Well,
there's a lot of phobias about things like that.
So we can't even rent with space. Not only can we get booked, we can't even rent a space. Like,
well, you'd have to do guerrilla performances, like, you know, rent, you know, this cafe 1 week and this church the next week. And, you know, if you can't have a permanent location, you could, like, rent, you know, a different place every month and have 12 different venues in the course of a year.
Where? No, where? I mean, we're still looking for, like, one place to rent.
Well, rent it under Jesse's name instead of your name.
Oh. Don't give out the website. Don't tell them anything about anything we do.
Just, you know, just say it's...
Right.
Know.
I just want to talk.
It's this nice disabled guy that draws people together and talks about disability issues. Even, even in S... San Francisco. Yeah, we can't rent a space in San Francisco either. We... We rented the Balazzo, and you know it was great. I mean, it was a great show. There were people. We did well. They made our rental money plus a percentage of the door, and the guys seemed happy with it. And then when Frank went to rent it again, he said he wouldn't rent it to us on a weekend. He'd rent it to us like during the week for the same price. Frank said, I don't get a discount. Yeah, because Frank's bringing bands from out of town, too, that can't come up in the middle of the week to perform.
Right.
He said, so how much money would I have to pay you to make you not care about how many people show up? He's off to talk to my partners, and we never heard from him again. So here's a Berkeley artist, ready to go out there and do stuff and bring people together, and there's no places to do that.
In addition to, even like you're talking about kind of a more wide open, I would love to see like a second like loud rock venue in addition to Gilman in Berkeley. I think that's really important. Like there's a lot of bands, either stylistically or, you know, maybe they're on a major label which we don't book. You know, there's a lot of bands out there that could play Berkeley that don't even play Oakland. They skip the East Bay entirely because there's very few places to play. Like, you know, even places, you know, like, I mean, bands that I hate would play places like the Omni, which I also just despised as a venue. But at the same time, they had a lot of crazy bands come through. And, you know, you can't, you know, I think it's probably completely, that's in Oakland.
When you say a second, you don't count things like the Greek Theater as live
because
they have live rock performers.
Not on a regular basis.
Nobody like on our level. That's like big name people, and we can't even afford to go there, let alone ever get booked there. We can't afford the tickets to go see somebody.
But I would say like a base level, like, you know, 300 seater venue max. You know, like 100 to 300 seater.
Like,
Berkeley Square was
like that. The Keystone.
Keystone, the Roundtrees, which used to be...
Well, Roundtrees is open again doing music. I've seen a couple of performances.
Yeah, they used to do punk shows in the 80s, in the mid-80s.
Where is Roundtree?
It's on San Pablo. It used to be called... This is before I moved here, so... Jeez, what was it called? I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
But they actually had some shooting recently, like last week or 2 weeks ago, which I read about, so I was kind of like unhappy because I was hoping that they would stay open and maybe that would be a place people could go and rent out for shows. Because I mean, that's a lot, you know, like in Oakland, I know there was your place too, where people just went in and said, you know, a failing blues bar on Martin Luther King there around 54th and MLK, and just went in and said, can we rent your place out? And all of a sudden, they had, you know, 150 thirsty punk rockers there watching bands they couldn't stand, but they were making hand over fist money at the bar. So they're like, oh, sure. And that's actually, there's Oakland's, I think, large enough where there's a number of different bars. Like, it's kind of like this, it goes from like one failing bar to another kind of thing.
But B,
doesn't help Berkeley.
Berkeley. Don't need, don't want, be, a, bars, e, either.
Yeah, well, it's also been, it sort of surprised me that Berkeley doesn't have lesbian bars or gay bars, given how many lesbians live in Berkeley and North Oakland.
Exactly.
It's quite amazing that we don't have a lesbian bar. And Oakland has, you know, several. Oakland has, you know, like the White Horse and the Benchin Bar and, you know, they have...
H-E-Hey. There. This.
And they might even have nudity at their bar once in a while.
This. R. Oh, oh, this room is a tour stop. I mean, it is. We get bands from all over the world that work their tour. Like, this is one of their, this is their East Bay or their Bay Area stop is performing on this show. And they, a, they contact us and ask to be on. Oh, they'll ask where else they can perform because they'll want to like try to fit something else in.
Yeah.
You know, we tell them what we have, but most, you know, it's like there isn't really anything.
Yeah, I get that all the time as well. Like just people I know contact me and I give them a list.
Right.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
You know, good luck.
Yeah.
But I mean, in terms of possibilities, there was that club that I think, it wasn't called Thunder Bay, but it became Thunder Bay.
Mm-hmm. In Berkeley?
Yeah, it's at Aquatic Park on the
north
end.
That's been converted to something else now.
I was, mental health?
Yeah, it's some kind of, some guy runs a non-profit health agency in there now.
But a spot like that is really perfect for a club. And that's kind of like Gilman Street used to be perfect because... You know, before, of course, we had the second largest restaurant in Berkeley move across the street, Pyramid. But it, you know, it was so isolated and dead at night. You know, you could have, you know, large shows. You could have, you know, I mean, we still do, obviously, but it's, you know, but that's a great location because it's isolated. You can make a lot of noise because you're right by the freeway, you know. So, I mean, if there's a place like that that's, and, you know, it's at the base of university, more or less, so you could actually take public transit there, pretty much.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. But. So, you know.
B. Bart is a B. Big. Well, our experience is for a lot of the people that both are in Frank's bands and want to come and see it, that's like the first question is, can I take Bart? You know, so it's like a pretty big deal. And if you say, well, I have to take Bart and then you'd have to take a bus, it starts to kind of, you know, be less attractive.
Yeah. Well, certainly.
S. So. Can, so get, so how, do, how do we get the P progressives to U S use what we have.
I'm not sure I understand the question. Use what we have in terms of ideas or in terms of spaces?
In terms of ideas. Like, be Like, for example, BTV, things like that. Like that something exists that they could use to get to pull people together to communicate. How do we get the progressives to utilize things like BTV?
Well, Jesse is one of the founding members of a group that's trying to pull a lot of progressives together.
Good segue.
So I'll turn it over to him to answer that question.
Well, there's a pretty new group called the Berkeley Progressive Alliance, which Chris has been at many of the meetings, and other city council members have been as well. But it's really... It's a group of progressives who are coming together to kind of remind everyone that we are actually progressives. I think for me, I mean, I'll just speak from my personal motivation briefly is, you know, when I ran for Berkeley City Council in 2004, I ran into a lot of people who were very progressive on national and international issues, but when it came to their own backyard, they voted moderate or conservative or whatever you want to call it, you know, and it was really striking to me that, hey, you know, we have to wake up and realize, you know, it's not like, you know, we're saying, like we were saying before, you know, you actually have a chance to change things in your own backyard if you're progressive. You actually can be on a commission. You can be elected to the city council. You can, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of part of my push for this. And also for people to realize, like, I think a lot of progressives are isolated in terms of they're very, you know, they're putting all their efforts into a single issue or maybe two issues at most. And they have to realize that they have a lot of support community-wide. And I think that's what the whole idea of this progressive alliance is. It's just that, an alliance of progressives. And, you know, I mean, I'm working... You can find out more information at berkeleyprogressivealliance.org. And there, you know, maybe in the near future there could be a BTV part of it. That would be fantastic. But I think right now part of our focus has been focusing on kind of an endorsement convention for the upcoming November elections in Berkeley. And so that's percolating up. But also what I'm really interested in actually is we're set up as a bunch of semi-autonomous groups that go out and work on specific issues. Like I'm involved with working on elections, you know, implementing instant runoff voting, ensuring accessible yet accessible voting machines with paper trails, a local campaign finance reform, things like that. That's, you know, things that I think are really important to me, and so I'm getting, you know, but, and so there's other groups that are working on things like labor issues, like the Berkeley Honda strike. There's people who are working on affordable housing and, you know, suggesting that perhaps that affordable housing should actually be affordable, like we were talking about before about, you know.
What a concept.
It's an incredible concept and something that, you know, no one has ever brought up in the city ever before, you know. But at the same time, you know, if more people say it, it gets amplified and, you know, we kind of get to, you know, counter like the moderate echo chamber that happens at the council level with when you have massive amounts of developer and real estate money going into some of these candidates. You know, I mean, I think that's really what we're talking about here. And so, you know, you have your affordable housing conundrum on one side, where people are getting priced out of the market here in Berkeley, while, you know, expensive condos and penthouses are going up. And on the other side, you have campaign finance reform. You know, why in the world should, my opponent, one of my opponents in the 2004 election, Councilmember Capitelli, at the first benchmark of the campaign reporting at the 6 month mark, I went through his, you know, public records. You know, everyone's records are public, and 48% of his donors were construction, mortgage lenders, real estate developers, contractors, all real estate related industries. You know, that was half of his donors. So who is he going to listen to? Not me. So anyway, so the idea is you bring these kinds of people together to fight that kind of idiocy.
So, why not So why? Did? Is? B? E? Is Berkeley? S? T? I? Still? P? R? Progressive?
I think the people of Berkeley are still progressive. I don't think our government's policies are. And I think this coming November, we are actually, you know, in, you know, it's hard to imagine taking any positive steps forward. I think, you know, partly with Mayor Bates having, you know, endorsing the most conservative member of the city council and the most conservative member of the school board, you know, that's sort of going to require a lot more energy on the part of progressives to try to counterbalance that if we're going to, if we're going to, you know, see any improvement in either the school board or the city council, you know, it's going to be, it's going to have to come from grassroots activism.
L. A. Last. Election. B. Bates. Was. The. Progressive. Candidate.
I remember that.
Yes.
Yes. Well, in, and you know.
I did not believe. I didn't believe it, but.
Well, on some issues, on some issues, he's definitely, you know, much better than Shirley Dean. He's a. For one thing, he's a very not much nicer person, so he's not mean to people like she was. And that, you know, is a positive improvement.
Hey.
But the policies really do matter more.
B-U-S Bush is nice. In they, so, they say.
Yeah, well, I certainly think that we need to, I mean, Willie Brown and Jerry Brown both got reelected against wonderful progressive people. I mean, Tom Amiano and Wilson Riles are wonderful progressive activists, and yet they got creamed by Willie Brown and Jerry Brown, respectively. Having an assembly member, you know, who's a famous name, you know, makes a very strong candidate. It helped us to get rid of Shirley Dean that we had a former assembly member. But now that he's there, you know, that is part of the status quo. So I think for me, the threshold question becomes, you know, not do we go off on some, I mean, certainly some people are going off saying, let's find another candidate for mayor. And, you know, lots of people call me up and try to get me to run, or call Donna Spring and try to get her to run. But if we did that, first of all, we would lose our seats on the city council. And second of all, you know, we probably, you know, wouldn't get any more votes than Tom Amiano or Wilson Riles got. So to me, you know, it's not about waiting until the next election. It's about putting pressure on
at
now.
Least, but at least we would have someone to vote for.
Well, I think we shouldn't wait for a whole year until the election before we try to make changes. I think we should create more pressure on each of these issues that are coming up. Like the affordable housing thing is coming up again in the next month.
But
so we need to create pressure now and not wait until another election.
A T T B A T Bates don't need
us?
Don't need us?
Don't need us? No. Is that what you were going to say? Bates don't need us?
I think, I it's not a question of whether or not somebody needs us. I think if we organize ourselves and turn out people, you know, for good policy suggestions, it's not just about convincing Tom Bates, it's about convincing five members of the City Council. I mean, we didn't convince Shirley Dean, and we won frequently. So, you know, I think we have a better chance of convincing Tom Bates than we do Shirley Dean. But we shouldn't just target him to persuade him. We need to convince any five members of the City Council to fight for these progressive causes.
And, you know, and some of these are, you know, some of these things I think Bates has come out in favor of in terms of some of the election-related things. I think, so, I mean, it's not a black and white issue. It's not, so it's, he I think it's fair to say he's a mixed issue. I think
N.
In terms of me.
E. Never. Is. Never is. It never is a black and white issue.
True enough.
Right, but if we organize ourselves and like through different groups, including the Progressive Alliance, if we get our message out and what our policies are, you know, my experience is when we have had a strong presence at the council meeting where we bring out 20, 30, 40, 50 people, we can usually kill the really bad things that either Shirley Dean or Tom Bates are trying to do. And we can frequently get the good things done that we want to do. But if we just put it forward as this, you know, oh, it's just coming from Donna Spring alone or Chris Worthington alone, it's just from one person, it's really hard to persuade people to do good things. But if we organize and get a bunch of people there to support it, we win a lot more than we lose. So I guess to me, I'm not really interested in being a sacrificial lamb to sort of protest against Tom Bates's wimpiness. I think it's far more important that we organize ourselves collectively and pressure everybody, not just Tom Bates, but everybody on the City Council.
Yeah.
We need be both. We need both.
We need
meaning somebody to vote for and the stuff that you're talking about, putting on the pressure for the current
issues. My strategy is sort of give Tom Bates a list of what are the progressive causes that are languishing by the wayside that really need to be accomplished. And then, you know, negotiate and put pressure on him and the whole City Council to get his commitment and other council members' commitments to that list. You know, certainly other people can spend their time recruiting a candidate or supporting candidates. That's there. But I guess I'm looking at it sort of from the immediate sense that there are key votes that are going to come up before November. And if we don't organize now and we wait and put all of our energy into electing a new person, for one thing, they very well might lose. You know, and for another thing, we can't wait for a year. We have to fight these battles now.
We need be both.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, personally, I find it more, I mean, like I mentioned, the Berkeley Progressive Alliance is working on an electoral convention and in partnership with a bunch of different progressives. And for me, I'm really much more interested in the more immediate issues that are coming up, like the ones that Chris just laid out, because, you know, an election is going to be really helpful in mobilizing people and getting people out to volunteer, to spread the word about different issues. But if the decisions are being made up until and through the election, we should also be right there as well, putting the pressure on. Because, I mean, heck, you go to a city council meeting, and this is no secret, you know, you have the swimmers come in with their flippers and their goggles. Pools are open over the winter, you know. I mean, it's a great spectacle, but it works. I mean, that kind of pressure, you know, if you get people in there, you know, when Gilman Street was dealing with the incoming Pyramid Brewery, you know, we had 150 people show up. You know, we had patrons and the parents show up, and we were able to at least get a certain amount of what we requested from the city government. And that was fine, and it's worked out fantastic. I mean, as it turns out, Pyramid Brewery has been a great neighbor, but I was completely wrong. But, you know, about them not being a good neighbor. They turned out to be fantastic. But, so, you know, I'm kind of, you know, I think right now, as we tape this, it's kind of up in the air who's running against Bates, if anyone's going to run, if Shirley Dean will run, if this person will run, and if that person will run. So I think, you know, if you have this conversation in like August, you'll probably have a lot more specifics.
Well, I'm actually
you two are booked then for August. Boom, we'll set the date up before you leave.
Well, I'm actually optimistic that if Berkeley politicians actually listen to Ron Dellums' speeches as he's running for mayor of Oakland, he really lays out some of the fundamental problems of what's wrong with the Jerry Brown, give the developers millions of dollars of city resources and land and then pray that it'll trickle down to benefit the people of Oakland. Ron Dellums really critiques that very eloquently and, you know, explains, you know, I'm for development if, and then he, you know, it's like, he gets very specific about if it meets this affordable housing, open space, you know, cultural diversity. And I've never seen anybody in Berkeley politics lay it out so clearly why this thing, like, give all these developers all the free ride, which Berkeley's doing with, like, affordable housing. We're letting them make millions of dollars in profits at the expense of low-income people. And I'm hoping that as people see Ron Dellums saying this, and he's actually not only said it, he's been a part of a coalition that's making it happen, like with the Ninth Oaks Project. The unions and the activists were a coalition, and Ron was a part of the coalition, that got a commitment that, you know, more of those units are going to be afforded. I think 15% of the units at 50% AMI. That is much better than what's going on in Berkeley right
you
now.
R. M. A. Making my case for me for a G. Good C. A. candidate for Berkeley mayor.
You've been nominated.
I'm quite happy being a city council member, and I want to pressure people to do things better where I am.
Did we A, ask you what you want? Don't remember asking him that. No. We are saying we need a good candidate.
Great. When are you announcing?
I am are running for president. We just started talking about the T-shirts, Frank Moore for president, and
right,
other products.
Well, I have no problem with lots of people running for mayor and trying to educate people about what the issues are and what's wrong with what's happening. I think that'd be great. And
we need a G E D E. L. Dellums. We need a Dellums in Berkeley. To kind of pull all that energy. That seems to be the way it works. My S. O. My son.
Well, in the meantime, we have to work with who we've got. And we've got to pressure who we've got. So the key thing isn't waiting for some utopian candidate to come along and save the day. The real job is to organize the people.
Both. We need both. I S E E C. You up No, U P I T I Utopia? And I see Utopia. He's looking at you and saying, I see Utopia.
I see utopia in all the little people who have such great ideas and visions and commitments.
I can not S spell utopia, but I see it.
Well, I have not given up yet on Tom Bates. I have hope that Tom Bates can find it in his heart.
Why not to
do better in the next 3 years than it has been in the past 3 years. And I think it's our job to help him to do better. You know, some people can help by pressuring him and criticizing him, and some people can help by, you know, being friendly to him and encouraging him. I think there's plenty of room for many different tactics.
And I think...
Oh. Okay.
And I'll do both, encourage and pressure.
I will W A wait until our August show. D A date. You'll wait until our August date. You're giving Bates until then, till August, when we meet again. March, April, May, June, July, August. That's like 6 months.
That's pretty good. I think part of it is showing Bates that there's a broad base of community support for these issues. Even things with the UC deal, you know, I mean, you talk to people left-wing, right-wing in Berkeley, and people are pissed about it, you know, and it does, like, that's actually a nonpartisan kind of pissed-offness, if I can mangle the English language that way. But I think things like, you know, actually affordable housing, you know, or implementing campaign finance reform in Berkeley, I think those are things that, you know, once it's shown there's really broad community support for it, I think more people will fall in line and say, yeah, you know what, we are going to take that step. We will be the, you know, one of the first municipalities in the country to self-regulate ourselves, to self-limit our fundraising, for instance.
Well, and the outrage about the secret settlement deal with the university, it's sort of interesting because really the newspapers haven't reported how bad that deal is. As much as people are outraged by it, it's actually far more outrageous than most people realize. Because as a city council member, I didn't even see the letter from the chancellor offering the city a better deal before any of this stuff happened than what ended up getting adopted at the end. So the chancellor, on his own, offered the city a much better deal than what we effectively ended up with at the end of the process. And yet, I'm a council member, and I didn't even see this letter. So, and I don't even think the public has seen that letter yet. So, but to me, the secrecy of, like, with the Landmarks Preservation Ordinance, refusing to release city documents to the newspapers, that's actually a more outrageous violation. You know, people are asking to see things. There is no law. Like with the secret settlement, they could sort of blame the lawyers and say, well, the lawyers, you know, made this confidential behind our backs. And to some extent, you know, it's more a lawyer's fault than Tom Bates's fault. You know, although he does mistakenly say this is a wonderful deal, which is, sort of, I mean, if he were saying, well, you know, we tried our best and this is the best we could do, you might have some respect for that. To say this is a wonderful deal, it makes me want to puke.
Can you get me that letter?
Sure.
From the chancellor? Is that the one you mean?
It's now been admitted to be a public document, yes.
We will read it on on August. No, on air. We'll read it on air after, like when we get it. We won't wait till August. We'll just read it when you get it to us.
Sure, yeah.
So we'll play on BTV, et cetera. Yeah. Over and over and over again.
Well, in the meantime, we have to get ourselves organized so that we're pressure. And we can't just pressure Tom Bates. It can't just be about a person. We have to pressure the whole city council. Most of them, we voted for them, and we contributed to them, and we volunteered for them. They should, at least most, if not all of them, should be, you know.
And? TV is a great way to do that.
Oh, that's a creative new idea. I've never heard that before. How thematic.
A.
So.
D.
I think BTV is paying you under the table to publicize that everybody should do things on BTV.
A direct way to bring it to the people, to tell the people about it.
Yeah, that's a very powerful tool.
In they don't know how, what to make of me, BTV, BCN, don't know what to make of Frank.
Well, luckily you get to make yourself, and you don't need them to know what to make of you.
E. X. Exactly.
But, I mean, if I can throw in a plug here for the BerkeleyProgressiveAlliance.org again. But
what was that website, Jesse?
That would be Berkeley, BerkeleyProgressiveAlliance.org.
See? Have not you been... Haven't you been doing that?
Yes, I have been. Well, I'll just do it again. but, I mean...
He's being thematic, too.
Yes, yes, I'm trying to, you know, stay on message. It's apparently a very important thing to do. You know, if we had... You know, as we kind of grow, I think people... You know, it's like any organization. You know, the amount of people who show up with the different skills and the time to do things, that's how things will happen. I mean, that sounds really obvious and trite, but it's so true. So, I mean, you know, people out there listening or watching want to come in and help produce a BTV show. It's really easy, and you have the time. Come on down. That'd be fantastic. And we could do something like this, like do a round table. We could do all kinds of different things, and that'd be, you know, thumbs up. And I think that's the kind of freedom that we're talking about here. The opportunities are endless.
You don't need to edit. That's the thing that slows everybody down.
Yeah.
You mean every stupid thing that I said is all going to be on the air?
Betcha.
Oh,
you
my God.
B. O. N. Only. On. BTV. Only on BTV. What? Is it? Does it happen? Oh, you mean on other public access channels, you can't get more than a half-hour show. And so you don't have the freedom to do something like this and not edit it down to a half hour.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, the opportunity is there for whatever, you know, I mean, in terms of, like, volunteers, I think, you know, there's tons of progressive organizations in this town who need help. And it's just a matter of stepping up.
Or J, you just doing it yourself, whatever moves you to act on.
Certainly. Yeah. Step up or get stepped on.
Where? No. People. Think. They. Are. P. Powerless. Do. But. That's not true.
True enough. No argument there.
I mean, it seems like that's the general thing. We run into it all the time where people will say to us, you know, oh, people like us don't win these kinds of fights. Or it's like the person that has more power or more money or more influence is the one that's going to win the battle. So why bother? H. E. Hey. I. Just. H. A. Had. C. H. R. I. S. Chris. This Chris. K-R-I-S. I just had Chris. When. Oh, when we were fighting for the censorship issues on BTV, you were the only person that we had on the city council supporting us, and yet we won. I mean, initially it was just you. I mean, other people eventually joined in when the ACLU started showing up. But when it was just like us, you know, and you were the only one that stood up, not even B. R. BTV. I mean, not even BTV stood up and supporting us.
Right, they wanted to move you to 4 a.m., I remember. Right.
Well, they wouldn't come to any of the city council meetings with us. They wouldn't do anything. They said that it wasn't their role to support it. That it was, you know.
But I remember that. I wrote a
but
letter.
That's, in that's, but see, to me, that's an example of how, even though, you know, we had a more conservative mayor and some pretty conservative council members, we still were able to win. So, you know, it's not just about changing a particular elected official. That can be beneficial, but it's about
That's why Frank is saying
organizing and getting people to turn out and provide pressure. Lots of politicians, good and bad, can be talked into doing good things if there's enough people willing to, you know, educate them and pressure them.
It would be easier.
Yes, it would be easier.
Yeah, it's easier when you have more progress. When you have
somebody like you in the position of more power as mayor, it would have probably been easier to do what we did than it was.
Yeah, it does help to have, you know, but even if you don't have progressive elected officials, or if you have wimpy ones, strong community support can create a lot of incentives for people to do good progressive things.
At you need to be you need to be a R U S T, Y, Rusty, W, Wheel. You need to be a rusty wheel.
A squeaky wheel?
Squeaky wheel.
Most of Berkeley's government is a squeaky wheel form of government. If you don't complain, you know, bad things will probably happen or good things won't happen.
Yeah.
And you've got to complain. And we have got to organize ourselves so that not just to complain, but to demand good policy.
You.
Constructively, even.
And you don't, and you have to not be L-I-M limited by R-E-A-S, reasonable. Mm. And you have to not be limited by reasonable.
Yeah, when Donna Spring was first proposing converting to biodiesel and putting solar on all of our buildings, people were like, well, that's unreasonable. Mm. We can't possibly do that. But she persisted, and we did actually convert most all of our vehicles. Unfortunately, now they have converted them back to less biodiesel, and we need to up the pressure again,
right,
to get that, because that's the single biggest thing we've done as a city related to global warming. And that was because of Donna Spring, one person really pushing hard.
Give my Frank, did you see that? Okay, give us B A back O our G L E and Emma N.
Gleaning.
What?
Gleaning.
Gleaning.
Give us back
our gleaning. Mm. Oh, what is that?
The pickups, you know, for disposing stuff.
Oh, is that what you mean? Oh,
the you have to arrange it now. So
that thing where once or twice a year
you could
lay everything out and you'd have all the different people come and pick it up. And everybody got to roam the neighborhoods and take stuff from each other's trash. That was a really big loss, losing that.
Half
of our house is furnished with
Well, that's one of the highest forms of recycling, instead of converting it to something, just instantly reusing it somewhere else where somebody can use it. It's very efficient recycling.
Why did they take that away?
That was one of the many unnecessary budget cuts that, you know, we've suffered big time on the budget in recent years, and affordable housing has been slashed out of the housing trust fund. Community agencies that serve poor people have been slashed, and all while we have millions of excess dollars coming in on the transfer tax because, you know, property is selling so astronomically. So I would say the biggest issue coming up is the June budget. Mm-hmm. Are we going to have a progressive budget this year, which we haven't had in recent years? And that has to happen by June. If we don't work on that and get a good progressive budget by June, you know, all that money, hundreds of millions of dollars, will be out the window in less progressive ways.
You tune in.
August.
Tune in on August when Jesse and Chris are back on the show.
Sure.
For a report on what's happened. Yes. A. C. L. I. It's a cliffhanger. U. N, L, unless Chris does, his S, H, unless Chris does a show, in which case you would be able to stay current on all of the local progressive issues and not have to wait 6 months for the update. And we are ready. We're ready to go. You bring us those tapes, we'll get them on BTV like that.
Yeah, we'll have to have a competition to see whether, you know, which of our two shows has more of the listening audience. But I can't imagine matching the depth and breadth and range of things that you do on your show. It would be hard for us to match what you do.
Don't
try. Just be yourself.
T-R try. but try. Can't imagine it, but try. C H A L challenge is good. My son. Okay, so Chris Worthington, council member, Jesse Townley. And we should put the websites, Jesse's website up with when we link this all over the place. Are you running again for city council?
My district comes up in 2008, so I have a couple years to figure out what my plans are.
A. O. Other. C. Cliffhanger.
Yeah.
We're full of them. Okay. Bye, everybody.
Great. Thanks.